everyone, and welcome to UIDEP, also known as the Untitled Iffy, Drea, and Alonzo Project. I'm your host, Iffy Wadiwe, but before we get started, I wanted to make a quick announcement about the name of our show. Look, the winner of our naming contest has been chosen, and it will be announced at the beginning of June 1st. So it's coming up next week. Get ready, buckle up, and then wait a few more days and it'll be Juneteenth, and celebrate by, sending me money via Cash App or Venmo. But this is the final episode that will be known as the Untitled Iffy, Drea, and Alonzo Project. So starting next week, our name will either be The Multiplex, Maximum Film, Intersectional Lens, or The Push-In. So, you know, it's been a long way without you, my name, but I'll tell you all about it when we got a new name. All right. Well, let's get started and introduce everyone. Of course, as always, I'm in the booth with my friends. So let me introduce you to them. First up, we have the Christmas Zaddy himself, and it's almost Christmas in July, so I know he's going to tell you why. Alonzo Duralde, what's good?
Oh, Iffy, I'm super excited because one of my very favorite authors has a new book out. Alison Bechdel, who is known by many as the creator of the Bechdel test, but really that was like one comic strip she did decades ago, and somehow that has taken hold, but she's given us so much since. The landmark comic strip Dykes to Watch Out For, the amazing graphic memoir Fun Home, which in turn inspired the Tony Award-winning musical. She has a new book, which is about her sort of lifelong interest and fascination with exercise. So I think, Iffy, this might be something you would want to pick up. It's called The Secret to Superhuman Strength. And it is, I just started reading it last night. It is funny and insightful and very personal in the way that all of her best stuff is. And, she is clearly speaking to a demographic that is not me, because, you know, this is a book about exercising, and I'm like, but it's nonetheless, I'm finding her journey fascinating, even if I am remaining resolutely seated while reading it. But anyway, Alison Bechdel, she's great. Get on board if you've not already been reading her stuff. But if you are a fan, new book out. I didn't hear about it until I wandered into a bookstore my first day out of the house. And so I'm like, where is the network of queer publicity that should have told me to look for this months ago? But anyway, I'm going to be that queer for you now. It's out. Ooh. Go buy it.
Let's go. Go buy it. That's all you need to know.
Be the queer network you want to see in the world.
Exactly. I try to live by that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. 100%. That other sultry voice that you heard on the track is none other than the Queen of Midwest herself, Drea Clark. What's good?
Hello, my sweet baby boy, Iffy. Hello. First off, I just want to declare for all of us on this Zoom, I resent how hard Casey just laughed when you called my voice sultry. Casey threw his head back, and I think not, sir. You settle down.
Yeah, one would almost call it a cackle.
Cackled at my sultry voice.
How dare you?
That guy. Okay, so weirdly, I feel like this is the second or third week in a row that Alonzo and I's What's Good are in the same media, in the same world, because I had a book. I have a book. I'm so excited about it. It is called The Other Bennett Sister by Janice Hadlow. And it's one of those, like, I'm constantly collecting recommendations. I'm sure everybody is. I have just this running notes doc in my phone that's like movie and TV and book recommendations. And when one really like pays off, I gotta share it. And this is, it's essentially, if you look at the story of Pride and Prejudice, and it's written in the style of Jane Austen
and zombies.
Yes. No zombies.
Oh, okay.
But it saved the zombies for this next chunk of our discussions. Yeah. No, it's Pride and Prejudice, and there's the five sisters. And this book centers on Mary, who's the sort of pious, boring one. You have your two pretty smarter older sisters, the two flighty younger sisters, and Mary. And so you get to revisit Pride and Prejudice through a different perspective, but then it continues on. The bulk of it is Mary's life after that. And it's, I love Austen, and it so beautifully captures the language, but there's so much great like self-actualization and growth in Mary as a character. And, you know, I love going, having other people dive into fictional worlds that I already enjoy and, you know, kind of growing them. So yes, The Other Bennet Sister, I highly recommend for all my other Austen heads out there, whether or not you have a sultry voice, check it out.
Ooh, yeah. I like that. That's a solid plug. Two solid plugs. Okay.
But book day.
Book Woo. Day. Well, look, we can't just, you know, jump into this meaty of a movie without a illustrious guest. So of course we have the host of the podcast, It's Always Halloween, writer, director, comedian, one of my favorite people, possibly love of my life, Luce Tomlin Brenner.
Oh my goodness. What's what good? A great reveal at the end.
Yeah.
What's good is Iffy and I are about to throw down. You guys need to excuse yourselves.
No pressure.
Yeah, right. Oh my God. Oh gosh, it just got so hot in here, right? My goodness. Oh, I'm wearing polyester too. What a bad plan. Well, what I was going to say, what was good was that my boyfriend, I'm so sorry, Iffy, if I had known,
just
if I had
impact.
Only known, my boyfriend built our cats a cat tree because he got looped into that fantasy that if you make something yourself, it'll be cheaper than if you buy it.
Yes.
But we paid three times as much for this like 2-weekend DIY project. So he built this cat tree. The cats are obsessed with it, which is really cute. There's just one catch, which is that he built it too tall. And so it's sort of like the behemoth of our living room. Like it's the focal point, no matter where you are. And the cats can't quite get on it. So they have to make running leaps.
No.
Yeah, it's amazing. So I'll just be sitting on the couch typing. And then I see just like this cat fly through the air to hit the cat tree. And like half the time they don't make it. So they hang on to the edge, like cliffhanger. And they're just like pulling themselves to the
top.
And so now this cat tree has become like the main comedy in our household.
Very dramatic.
Wow, yeah.
Very exciting.
It is very dramatic.
You get action, comedy, drama. Mm-hmm. What does this cat tree not do?
Oh, it doesn't subtly blend into the background. I'll tell you that. It's like three different colors and textures.
It's the HBO Max landing page of cat trees.
Oh, yeah, that
very
page
niche.
Is bright.
Oh, hey, Iffy, what's good with you?
What's good with me? Well, what's good with me is that, you know, I haven't got to drop a what's good like this in so long. But this Saturday, you can go outdoors and see a stand-up comedy show called Nightcap in Burbank, California, and watch me perform stand-up live. A lot of people have been saying they're buying tickets because they're excited to leave their house. They're going to be very unexcited when they can tell that I haven't done stand-up in a year.
I hear that.
I'm gonna let you bait your excitement. Just know this is my first time on stage telling jokes, you know.
Will you be holding a notebook?
Yeah. What's next? What's next?
He's gonna have his daughter hold cue cards.
Those like the notebook thing is a fairly normal. It's funny when people feel very confident about doing the notebook thing at a show, but then another one is that all new comics love to do is sit down. they're like, we saw George Carlin do this, so you know we gotta sit down. It's like, stop it. It's not stop. Stop it. You ain't that tight.
If you got time to lean, you got time to clean. Come on.
Here's the thing. When you can
you're
get away
work.
With smoking and non-smoking venues like Dave Chappelle, you could sit down. Like that man is probably getting fined every time. But you know what? Go ahead, sit down. But speaking of sitting down, today we're going to sit down and talk about the Army of the Dead.
You got there.
Oh, yeah. They didn't think it could be done, but here you go. Sitting down. And, of course, we're going to answer a call from our hotline. And, as always, we'll have a Steph Picks. But first, it's time for the new segment, In a Dig, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Each of us will read a new segment and answer the question, Is This Important? Do I Care? And of course, I'm kicking things off with my best friend, Timothy Chalamet. We were very excited to find out that Timothy has been cast as Wonka. Deadline and his text messages direct to me, believe me, has reported that Timothy Chalamet has been cast as the eccentric chocolatier Willy Wonka in a prequel film to Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, simply titled Wonka. Simply like when Timmy decided to make his follower count zero and has finally unfollowed me. The movie is set to be directed by Paddington writer-director Paul King, so you know it's going to be pretty great. Is this important? Do you care?
Oh, I have thoughts.
Here we go.
So obviously, you know, I don't know if it's ever come up on the show before. Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory is the first movie I remember seeing in theaters as a child in its original run. And it is arguably the movie I have seen more times than any other in my life. What is the landing page of my phone? It's a Wonka bar.
Oh, my goodness.
Part of me is like, how dare you? Stop this now. This can only be a disaster. And part of me is like, the Paddington guy, you say. So I live in hope. That's where I am right now. Check back with me later.
I'm with you. This is one of those ones where the creative talent they have attached to this made a real big difference in my response. And it is in the sort of wait and see. But it's not just like Paul King, who did great things with Paddington 2. But Simon Farnaby, who's he's co-writing this with, is this British actor, writer, comedian that I feel like many people would recognize if you watch stuff like The Detectorists or just random British comedy. Like, I feel he popped up in like The Mighty Boosh.
I say Paul King was a Mighty Boosh guy, right?
Yeah, that exactly. And Simon Farnaby makes such great weird stuff. He also helped create the show called Yonderland, and what was the other one? Horrible something. Horrible Histories. And he's so weird that it fits the weird uniqueness, both of the doll, but also of that original film. Like, you want a team that is going to be tapped into the stone cold. There is a sense of threat that needs to be there.
Yes.
The man kills children. I mean, let's not scoot around that.
Danger, non sequiturs, and chocolate. Well, these are the things we need.
Yes. He's also enslaved an entire race of people to work for him.
There's
so us looking at what shape that, like, I feel this is a team that could do it in a very playful, yet give us the menace that we sort of need, right?
I absolutely agree. And I think that Timothée Chalamet is just like twitchy and whimsical enough to pull it off. Like, I don't know if the world needs more Wonka, but if we're going to do it, definitely like a living, like, skeleton Muppet like Timothée Chalamet, I think, is a perfect choice. So,
stop! Skeleton Muppet is so perfect.
That's exactly who he is.
An ambulatory rubber band, yes.
Absolutely. And so I think, yes, teamed up with the living saint that is Paul King, I think that it'll be interesting. Even if I don't want it or need it, I don't think it'll be harmful to the world. And, you know, it'll be, I think, at the very base level, I think it will be fun and sweet, unlike Roald Dahl. So that's already a win. Like, So yeah, I'm not mad. I feel fine, like optimistically fine about it.
In the words of our producer, disgraced pervert Kevin Spacey has been cast in his first film since over a dozen sexual assault allegations were brought against him. Back in 2017, actor Anthony Rapp publicly accused Spacey of sexually assaulting him when Rapp was just 14. Many others stepped forward with accusations, including many young men who worked with Spacey while he was the artistic director of the Old Vic Theater. The movie that Spacey is cast in will be directed and starring Italian actor and Vanessa Redgrave's husband, Franco Nero. It's called The Man Who Drew God, about a blind artist who is miraculously granted the power to draw accurate portraits of people based on their voices. Spacey will play some sort of detective. Is this important? Do you care?
Can I just go back and reclaim the good name of perverts? I know that this is something Iffy also cares about.
Thank you for standing up for me, Luce. Thank you so much.
I just think, as proud perverts, that we should stand up against the fact that, like, a disgraced, like, predator is trying to get our cool name.
Fair.
And that
we'll amend that. Let the record show we're amending that to disgraced predator. Yes.
Thank you. Perverts are fun and cool and have cool hair.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's disgusting. And like, it'd be great if he made any effort at all. Like, I wish the headline was like, is in rehab for a year, is quiet, learns lessons. But like, I do believe people can change, that we should work on everybody and not just have them be like, oh, screw it, they're lost causes. But there's like no effort. Supposedly he went and got undisclosed counseling back in 2017, but I couldn't find anything more about that.
That's like he went and built a cat tree. That means nothing.
I'm already calling it that. In like within a year to a year and a half, Scott Rudin is going to show up with some prayer beads around his wrist and be all like, "Hey, everybody, I've done the work on myself and I've changed." You know, Spacey's not even faking it. I mean, he keeps putting out these weird YouTube videos where he's like cocking an eyebrow, like, "Well, maybe I'll be back," and you don't know what is going on. And blah, 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 blah. I do love that today Vanessa Redgrave's people are like, oh, she's not in this movie.
Let's
be real clear. She was never in this movie. There were talks that she might be in this movie. She is not in this movie.
Yeah. That's so wild. And I think it just echoing everything that has been said. Yeah. It really felt like those first Frank Underwood videos he did. I think in his head, he was like, I'm going to do these videos. Everyone's going to think I'm great. And then I can show it to Netflix and be like, I'm good. Mm. He does the video. Everyone's like, you're weird and gross. Leave us alone. And it just like, I honestly think there's a world in where if everyone would have been like, oh yeah, then he would have been back sooner. But it is so funny because I was at a friend's birthday and that's when I found out that they had a bet when Kevin Spacey would be featured in films again. Technically, they haven't won the bet yet because it has to be a widely released film. So he's still in the good, but it is like, I'm sure this is just a litmus test. And I think as long as we're still like, no, go away, we will prevent him from crawling back into the annals of Hollywood. I don't know.
In a recent interview on the Off Menu podcast, actor Martin Freeman, best known for his roles in The Hobbit, Sherlock Holmes, and the Fargo TV series, went off about his problems with method acting. Quote, to be honest, it's quite a pain in the ass when someone loses themselves. It's a massive pain in the ass because it's no longer a craft and a job, unquote. For those who don't know, method acting is an acting technique that aspires to complete emotional identification with a part. It's been popularized by a lot of American actors like Dustin Hoffman, Marlon Brando, and Jared Leto. There's a list. It can be traced to Lee Strasberg in the Actors Studio and the stuff that he was picking up from a guy named Stanislavski, but that's a whole other story. Freeman even went on to criticize the way that Jim Carrey threw himself into the role of Andy Kaufman in the movie Man on the Moon. Quote, again, I'm genuinely sure Jim Carrey is a lovely and smart person, but it was the most self-aggrandizing, selfish, narcissistic fucking bollocks I have ever seen. The idea that anything in our culture would celebrate or support it is deranged, literally deranged. Unquote. Is this important? Do you care?
Yeah, because I'd love to start the conversation as, you know, as an actor.
Yes!
I'd love to start the conversation on that because, yeah, I think even when I forget the name of the documentary about Man on the Moon, but I remember watching that and be like, this doesn't make you look good, Jim Carrey. This really does look like you're terrorizing this. And then all the Jared Leto stories. Mm. But, you know, I have seen, you know, actors who use it by being silent, going off into their corner and being in that zone in a very personal level. And I'm sure, and it really feels like that Martin Freeman's kind of talking about the kind of like former, where it's like these people who think they have to force the crew and everyone around them to deal with them being in this character. And that it's like very, you know, like I think the Split the Difference kind of fun version is when Donald Glover was the character
character in Atlanta, and he was pretending to be that character, but he wasn't necessarily being a dick. He just was only like being referred to as that fake weird Michael Jackson man. And I feel like that's fine, where you're like,
the
no,
kind of
I
method
want...
acting where you get in all your shots for the day.
Yeah, exactly. But once you start like throwing weird things at everything except everyone except Viola Davis because you know better, like that's when I'm like, no, you can fuck off with that.
Yeah, acting is tricky because it's an art form and it's very difficult, and many people think it's not difficult and that they could do it just as well as anyone that they watch, and so it's very easy to judge performances. And I have such a respect for art in general that people who need to approach things from unique angles or whatever, fine. But there is also the idea of movie making is commerce as well. And if I'm making my day, and as someone who on set, generally my job is handholding talent or, you know, complimenting talent, you know, it all sort of falls in the same thing. If I'm sitting there talking to someone who thinks that they are an alien and I have to explain how humans work to them, like, you are also my employee, BeakBot. Like, I can't do this. So
I need you to sign these lunch vouchers.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, ooh, yeah, you need to break, because it's part of your union agreement. But my favorite thing about this is that this is also a conversation that's been going on since method acting made it into the forefront. So like, I love that Alonzo brought up Lee Strasberg and like the idea of all of the people that were learning it. Cause one of my favorite early stories is about John Cassavetes, who was famously hated method acting. And like his whole thing was like, no, don't be dark and immersed and whatever, be in the moment and full of joy. And so he auditioned for it for the Actors Studio, right?
Yeah.
The Actors Studio, and with Burt Lane, who he ended up running his own thing with. And the two of them improvised a scene that they said was a scene from another production. And Strasberg was so impressed by it that he talked to Cassavetes, and then Cassavetes made up this whole story about being under like financial duress. So Strasberg offered him a full scholarship, and Cassavetes was like, see, you don't even know that I'm lying. So your stuff is bullshit. Like, we just improvised a scene, and then I improvised a monologue. Like, you are nonsense. And me getting the chance to tell that story, thank you, Martin Freeman. Like,
this is also a US-UK ongoing fight. The famous story from the shoot of Marathon Man, where Dustin Hoffman apparently spent an entire night screaming so that when he got to the set the next morning, he would be appropriately hoarse and bedraggled. And his co-star, the great Lord Laurence Olivier, looked at him and said, why don't you try acting, dear boy? It's much easier.
All right. Well, I mean, look, we've done it all. We've it up. It was either that.
We've itted all the dick, I suppose. We, the other way to go with this.
That's as much as we could itted dick.
Yes. Yeah. All right. Well, we're gonna take a break, but when we come back, we're gonna be talking about Army of the Dead.
Okay, so we're going to take a quick little break here and talk to you with a little message from our buddies at Storyblocks. Storyblocks is dedicated to being the world's best royalty-free stock media subscription service with an ever-growing library of stock assets, including music, images, sound effects, and more.
Oh, yeah, yes, indeed. Because, look, I'm telling you, I've used Storyblocks before, and having access to just a library of things that you can use for, who knows, you know, maybe a film. Or in my case, a dumb video that's a bit. It's good to have just a whole library. They have beeps, screeches, yells, glass breaks, or some tunes and pictures. They have it all.
They also have affordable subscription plans and tools. And with Storyblocks' unlimited all-access plan, you can get unlimited downloads of everything in their library. And even if your subscription ends, everything you've downloaded is yours to keep. In 2020, Storyblocks launched Restock, an initiative to increased diversity in their library, Storyblocks is committing to having 20% of their footage with people contain Black, Indigenous, and people of color by 2022, with plans to expand their scope to include more underrepresented groups in the future.
All right, so you can explore their library and subscribe today at storyblocks.com/whoshot. That's right, they still have our old code, even though we're changing our name. So that is storyblocks.com/whoshot.
Somewhere between science and superstition, there is a podcast.
Look, your daughter doesn't say she's a demon. She says she's the devil himself.
That thing is not my daughter. And I want you to tell me there's a show where the hosts don't just report on fringe science and spirituality, but take part themselves.
Well, there is, and it's Ono, Ross, and Carrie on Maximum Fun.
This year, we actually became certified exorcists.
So yes, Carrie and I can help your daughter.
Or we can just talk about it on the show.
Ono, Ross, and Carrie on MaximumFun.org.
Welcome back to the Untitled Iffy, Drea, and Alonzo Project. I had to get method there, get into the zone, and now I'm back to host mode. I was in actor mode at first, but now I'm in host mode. I am your host, Iffy Wadiway, and in the studio with me are...
Drea Clark.
Luce Tomlin Brenner.
Alonzo Duraldi.
And today, we're talking about Army of the Dead. Drea, would you mind blessing us all with a brief synopsis explaining what happens in this movie?
Oh, no, you guys. A brief synopsis. Okay. We are in a world where there has been a, like, advanced zombie alien something prototype, whatever, accidentally escapes from the control of the U.S. government, ends up in Vegas, infecting pretty much everybody, turning them into zombies. To combat this, the government walls off Vegas with these huge freighters, sealing in all of the zombies, setting up a barrier of sort of containment camps of the people left behind. And a lot of them have sort of immigration status issues. And then the rest of the world sort of goes on as this weird hellscape in Vegas continues. Then Dave Bautista, who made it out of Vegas, is approached by a very wealthy man who says he'll give him $50 million if he puts together a crack team to break into Vegas and to get all of this money out of a vault from a casino that's been stuck there. And so, you know what he does? He puts together a crack team, and it is a hybrid movie of heist and zombies, and they get a woman who's a coyote living in the camps who leads them in. And yeah, so they're traveling within the Zombieville of Vegas to get to this casino. And you guys, we have a case cracker. We have a sort of sharpshooter maniac. We have Dave Bautista as a line order chef. We have, you know, pretty much everything. And then Tig Notaro as your escape artist. So basically everything you need for this sort of heist. I mean, it's not the team I would have put together, but it's the team they put together. So yeah.
I'm fascinated by the way you pronounce V-E-G-A-S. I don't think I've ever heard anybody say that word that way.
Vegas?
Vegas.
Vegas.
Yeah, I've always heard Vegas. Vegas. I've never heard anybody Vegas, say Vegas. Vegas. Before.
Yeah, cool. Only time I talk about Vegas.
I also can't say the word vague. So vague. Yeah, why? Whatever. I'm from Minnesota. You know, that's how we say it in God's country.
I'm not judging. I'm just saying it's new to me. That's all.
Yeah. We're just, but for the listeners, we are talking about the city, not the Street Fighter character, Vegas, and multiples of set Vegas.
and as Dick Cavett said, Las Vegas is an anagram for salvages.
Oh, man. I'm going to kick this off with the first question, which I'm gonna ask that producer Casey wrote and answer. And the question producer Casey asked to kick this off is, why was this so long? And my answer is because we gave him too much power with the Snyder cut.
It's not even June and we're doing our second Zack Snyder movie this year.
This was in motion well before that. Like, that was still all cranking along and midway through, oh no, if he's got thoughts on that, go.
I see wagging.
I'm so glad you said that, Drea, because is it just me or does this movie feel like it's stuffed in a bunch of like COVID-esque isms into it? So like the fact that it was in motion all along is interesting to me, because to me it felt like a lot of it was like a take on like COVID and the pandemic and stuff like
no,
that.
No, it's worse than that. It's truly worse. It wants to be a take on immigration and shit. And the things that this thing alludes to are so far beyond the comprehension of the filmmakers, and that there's zero nuance or subtlety. The idea, I lost my brain, because to set up the real world of it, they go to like a newscaster, and there's the sort of liberal talking person and a conservative talking person, and they're talking about the immigration status of the people held in the camps outside of the wall. All things that we've heard about and been rolling our eyes and frustrated about for how long now. And the people that they had doing that, the liberal is Donna Brazile, who is like the Democratic national chair or whatever, and freaking Sean Spicer. And I was like, if I was at a table right now, I'd flip this table upside down, like, rah. So there are things that this movie thinks it is like,
look,
Zack
Snyder's
around
a big Dancing with the Stars fan, Drea.
Truly. Okay, fair. But there's no nuance. There's no understanding. There's no, and truly, they're just there of like, ooh, you know what walls remind me of? That yes. wall they keep wanting to build. Like, it's about that much level of thought. So I didn't get the COVID. Yeah, I got
it's technically
more
a reference, but to what? It doesn't make any sense. Like, there's a thing with the temperature gun that's maybe about COVID, but also maybe about immigration. But it seems like it's supporting to anti-maskers.
Well, that's exactly what I'm feeling, Luce, is like, I honestly couldn't tell whose side this movie was on. Like, because it flip-flops, because there's one side where it seems like it's very anti-mask, and then there's another side where it feels like it's very
And they talk about how they're throwing, like, abortion rights activists and LGBT activists into the camps as well. So I'm like, okay, well, that's a little
cool
lefty thing. And then Sean Spicer shows up and you're like, I don't know what to do with
it. And it has nothing to do with it. It's just like, ooh, you guys, this thing, it's zombies and it's cutting edge. I think it's also this thing there's a vast history of genre films, but even zombie genre films that have like such elegant metaphors cooked in. And I was actually intrigued and looking forward to this, because my favorite thing that Zack Snyder's done was Dawn of the Dead, which was a remake, and he managed to, there were like interesting levels of it. The whole thing is about consumerism. It's all in a mall. Like, there's all of these things that one was doing that was taking on this tradition of using genre to give us both like fantasy and blood and fun and whatever, but also have this commentary. And this movie had zero commentary to it and was also, as Casey said, so long. But it's one of the few movies that we talk about where, you know, I like to try and write notes so I can say sensible things when we have our conversations. And this is one of the rare movies where literally every one of my notes is a question.
Well, see, also that's a good point, because here's the thing is, like, I feel like Zack Snyder is in the part of his career where he's just doing fun stuff, which I'm over here, I'm the guy who defends Sucker Punch. So like I'm like,
you keep bringing that up. Stop it. And I keep meaning to talk to you about that. Yeah.
But like in this one, like when it laid the groundwork that which is that zombies exist in this portion of society, they need to go in to steal this money. Like, it answered the one question that everyone had, Drea specifically, which is, why do you need money in a zombie apocalypse? And it was like, oh, because this is a contained zombie apocalypse. So it's actually a heist movie with zombies. And that worked. And
that's
then it kept
great.
Adding.
That
it kept
is an
adding,
amazing pitch. Intersection. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. This and is four kept movies that, and he didn't explore any of them. If it was 90 minutes and he would have picked one, it could have had something.
Oh,
well, and there's great elements for each of them. Like, on the zombie level, I haven't seen it before. There's two kinds of zombies. Yeah. They have the slow, dumb walkers, And then they have like a fast sentient, apparently able to procreate. Like,
oh my gosh,
sexy zombies.
They bit all the Cirque du Soleil people in Vegas because they got moved.
I honestly, one of my things was I wish there were more Cirque du Soleil zombies.
When you talk about the many movies this could have been and wasn't, one of them is just like a story with characters, because like there is this clear presentation of Dave Bautista as somebody who, between the zombie war that happens in the opening credits and his job flipping burgers in a nowhere diner, that clearly his life has fallen apart. It has cost him his relationship with his daughter. It has cost him a relationship that might have turned into something with one of his fellow survivors. And these things are sort of alluded to, but never brought home, never delved into, never explored in any way that's remotely meaningful. They're just sort of littered along the way as these, like you said, these breadcrumbs that don't lead to anybody's house.
Also, to be the godfather of the DCU and really not understand fridging, so much so that you have create such the feat of fridging two love interests in one movie.
Wait, you need to explain fridging for fridging anyone else who doesn't know.
Okay, so fridging comes from a term, it is based off of a specific scene in the Green Lantern comics when I think it was Kyle Rayner opens a refrigerator door and finds his dead wife in there, and that's his motivation.
I thought it was Ralph Dibny's wife.
Yeah, you one of the Green Lanterns, one of the white ones.
Man. But yeah. Basically, it means if you're killing a woman to give a man a backstory.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And so, I mean, you guys, because I definitely knew what that meant. So that was more for just anyone listening.
Not to be confused with Nuke the Fridge, which is what happens in Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, yes. Which is a reference to doing a stupid thing with your leading character.
Amazing.
Yeah. So his wife that we never met is dead, and that's his kind of backstory. And then this new love interest, she dies literally after we hit a resolution into, sorry for the spoilers, but I have to say the spoilers because I have to mention the fact that, you know, I think we have to understand that when you're in a movie of any post-apocalyptic nature or any dangerous task like a heist, and someone keeps mentioning the things they're going to do after this heist, it is the biggest I'm going to die sign. I'm going to die.
It's like that guy in Hot Shots was like, and I think I've solved the JFK assassination.
Yeah. It's like Dave Bautista 5 separate times mentions the things he's gonna do after this heist. I'm like, oh, he's dead. He's dead as hell. Well, the thing that kind of was grating at me, and I feel like it's a good problem to have, but shouldn't be a problem, especially when there's some fat to trim, is the world building of these smart zombies. Like it seemed like they never explained what makes someone a smart zombie and what makes a bad one. And it seemed like there was a ritual where it seemed like they were kind of trying to figure out if you would be a smart zombie or a shambler.
You have to be sexy.
I think it's such a bummer that there's also...
all the smart zombies are sexy.
Yeah, and there's a class system even when you're a zombie. Like, after I'm dead, I still have to compete?
Yeah,
this is exhausting.
It never ends, Lucy.
Yes, Jesus.
I want to circle back to the beginning where Ify's discussion about whether or not this was designed to sort of exploit the pandemic. I think that a lot of people just got lucky with the pandemic in plot terms, just because I think so many movies are about, like, contagious diseases or, you know, reasons that people are being stuck at home or whatever. And so I think their card came up like, oh, look at this. You know, I don't think it was necessarily a calculation on their part, but who knows?
I do want to say, just because I'm a big horror movie fan, that George Romero's original Dawn of the Dead was set in a mall and was about consumerism. So Zack Snyder doesn't really get credit for that.
Oh, yeah, no. My only credit was I was genuinely shocked he didn't fuck that up.
Yeah, seriously. So it's like he can do subtlety or, I don't know, he can do satire well when it's someone else's, maybe. But I really did think that the one scene that was extremely successful in this movie and really made me want it made me mad again because I was like, this could be a better movie, was the zombie sort of maze when they're hibernating, which is like a new zombie thing they came up with. And that had actual suspense. It actually felt scary. And I was like, what if this was the movie? And he's like, nah, we're doing something else. And that was such a letdown. And the helicopter scene even had some suspense in it, like fighting a zombie on a helicopter had sort of Fast and Furious vibes. And I was like, oh, I could kind of get into this. And that wasn't about that either. So it had like a few moments. And I think with movies that make me mad, it's because you can see the glimmer of an interesting movie in there. And so it's not fun because you're like, but you missed so many opportunities, and it makes me feel really depressed.
I think, you know, that's just kind of like the thing where I think Zack Snyder has a lot of fun, interesting ideas, but just does everything. Like, instead of like just kind of edit, like, I feel like Zack Snyder in a duo with someone is like the perfect thing with someone who's just going to be like, oh no, let's focus. But I think Zack Snyder just stuffs all his good ideas when it's like, bro, you could be making a whole lot more money if you just separate these ideas and make them different movies. But you know, what do I know? Let's review this movie before I say something.
Such restraint, Iffy. I'm happy to go. It's going to shock you to hear after all my words that you guys, I would skip this. This movie, if nothing else we've said tells you the kind of movie it is, then just know this movie ends on a like haunting, voice with orchestra behind it version of the Cranberries zombie. And that's this movie to a T. So please.
They named the safe Götterdämmerung just to have the excuse for Wagner needle drops.
Yes. That's a good.
I am maybe a little surprising. I'm a stream it just because I think there are, you know, as frustrating it is, you see those moments that give you an idea of the much better movie this could have been. At least it has those moments, unlike say Sucker Punch. And in fact, I would
leave
say
Sucker Punch out of this.
This is like Dawn of the Dead is still Zack Snyder's best movie. This is the best thing he's made since Dawn of the Dead, and it ain't great, but it's still better than everything else in the meantime.
Yeah, but there's the comparison. Like, I would rather give the people lists of heist and zombie movies that they could get so much enjoyment out of.
No argument. Look, it's on Netflix, and that's kind of where it belongs. Like, there have been films during this where I'm like, oh, when the theaters open up again, I can't wait to see this on the big screen. We talked about it last week, in fact. This is not one of them.
Luce, what about you?
Yes. Skip it. It made me feel so bad. My serotonin was depleted. It felt like when I was in college and I did ecstasy, and then the next day I would feel like shit. That's what I felt like after watching this movie. Absolutely skip it. It's joyless.
Oh, man. I'm a stream it. I'm team stream it as well. I think here's the thing, you know, as your movie Sherpa on this pod, I know if you're a Snyder head, this it's going to give you what you want. I will say there were a lot of cool action sequences. I think the scene after they fridge his second love interest, that action sequence was really kick ass. I really liked that. You know, kudos to having lots of women in this film, if not only to kill them all. You know,
killing lots
I really
of women
did like Hyper Butch Tig Notaro. Let me see more kick ass Tig. That was a solid move by that, and let Tig be that,
she like, is I, our new Charles Bronson.
Yes. Oh man,
she was very funny. Most of the only laughs I feel like came from her.
Yeah, so more Tig for me. So that is my review and our review on The Army of the Dead, but we do have to take a break, so we'll be right back after we hear from another show for Maximum Fun.
The Beef and Dairy Network is a multi-award-winning comedy podcast here on Maximum Fun, and I would recommend you listen to it. But don't just take it from me. What do the listeners have to say?
I would rather stick a corkscrew inside my ear, twist it around, and pull out my ear canal like a cork than listen to your stupid podcast ever again. Please stop contacting me.
Hell would freeze over before I recommended this podcast, the Beef and Dairy Network, to anyone.
Not in a million years. Actually, scratch that. Make it a billion years. No, how long's infinity?
That's the Beef and Dairy Network podcast, available at MaximumFun.org and at all good and some bad podcast platforms.
Disgusting.
Welcome back to the Untitled Iffy, Dre, and Alonzo Project. I'm your host, Iffy Wadiway. In the studio with me are...
Alonzo Duralde.
Luce Tomlin-Brenner.
Drea Clark.
And today we have an email sent to our hotline from Sarah. This is a very good question, too. Sarah writes, with the decision to change the podcast name, I was wondering whether you have a stance on gun violence in films. I know it can be a prickly topic, just throwing it out there. I'll just admit, I didn't like John Wick and didn't see any sequels. I love stunt work and I'm not particularly opposed to violence in movies, but John Wick was constructed to do nothing but give permission to the title character to shoot dozens of people. I found that it just didn't say anything meaningful to me. I know I'm in the minority about this movie and I love Keanu, especially his stance on pineapple on pizza, live and let live.
I thought this was such a great, oh, yeah. Sorry, Iffy. I was just excited for this question, for this episode, because I actually usually don't have an issue with gun violence in movies, but I was really taken aback by the way that Army of the Dead opens with so much aggressive head shooting and it really, even though it's like zombies mostly, they look like people the way that it was shot. And I was really turned off and like grossed out by how much like constant head shooting there was in like the first 10 minutes. And so I really felt like I think I might have my fill of gun violence in movies if it's like that aggressive.
I think for me, the defining element is, and it's interesting that John Wick was your reference in this, Sarah, because that's one that works for me because it sets up a world where it's just outside of our world and that everyone taking part in it is also armed. And there's also like, there's enough of a sort of fantasy element and,
there's no innocent bystanders.
Yeah. Thank you. And it's for me, the parts where I'm so acutely aware and feel the gun violence or feel just the ickiness of it in my gut is much more in sort of naturalistic in, someone discovers a gun or someone's defending themselves because there's like a true threat. Like if it's something like John Wick is something that I love because I just sort of give myself over to the video game feel of it. Mm-hmm. And then I'm just watching. It's like the choreography and the how many interesting ways can I do this one act? And the act is, you know, shooting at another human body, but they're not human bodies in my head, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, I was just kind of plus one that where it is like this fantasy world. And I think even to go further where it's like this thing where like everyone is signed up for it and everyone is established as evil. You know, I think, you know, same thing rule goes for zombies. It's almost in the video game where that's why there are so many zombie video games, because you can show violence because this is an undead human. But I love talking about this because I can talk about the example. And if you listen to that episode, I kind of said this on that episode where it also depends on context and who is doing it, why they're doing it. And like, that's why I didn't fuck with the Rambo movie at all, because that to me, that felt like an excuse to have an old white man shoot a bunch of Mexican people. Like, that's what that felt like. That's what it looked like. Whereas like you have Keanu Reeves, especially in John Wick, he's kind of getting his ass kicked too. So it also doesn't feel like that much of a slaughter. Like he gets his ass beat quite a bit in those movies versus like, you know, there is like an element when you just have someone just murdering after murdering, not really getting touched. And I do think, yeah, for me, it definitely becomes sensitive if it's a white person and multiple minorities. Like that all always will raise a red flag. Or if it's like, it just does it, like it really has to be truly like justified to me. But like for the most part, yeah, if it's like these mobster movies or like a shoot 'em up type movies where it's like these are all hitmen in this fantasy world who are trying to take each other out, then it's cool. But when it comes into this like pure hunting ground, that's when I get turned off.
Yeah, I think definitely context is key, which is why I think it's you know, harder and harder to watch movies that are about cops shooting people indiscriminately, you know. What's fascinating is if you look at like there, I've seen I don't even know how many at this point, but like a lot of foreign films that literally revolve around the idea of like one person has a gun and the cops are like, oh man, we got to get that one gun off the streets, you know? And it's like, it is treated like this big deal. And here, of course, this country being this country, you know, it's just like, how many movies have we seen where people like open up, you know, the Schiffer robe and it's just like, you know, an entire, you know, just like armament thing in there, you know? And so it's just kind of interesting how cultural this is in terms of what different countries' relationships with firearms is, and how ours is just so, you know, off the beam that it just sort of, you know, obviously is going to wind up being reflected, you know, in our media and in our what passes entertainment. You know,
I think how gleeful it is too. Just how gleeful shooting is, I think that's when it hits me too, even when, because I agree, I love horror movies. There's obviously a ton of violence. I don't typically have problems with violence, but like when it's something's really mean-spirited and I feel like the director is back there being like, ha-ha, this is hilarious. Like that's when it starts to make me feel kind of icky, because I'm like, oh, I don't want to laugh at all of this shooting, unless, like you said, everybody's a bad guy or you're like excited to see someone get their comeuppance. But just like even repeated gun shooting noises is kind of a lot for me. Like it's like grating.
Yeah. For a lot of the stuff that I think we're all in agreement on in terms of like what works okay for us, there is a level of sophistication to that, that it's taken us kind of years to figure out, of at least for myself, of reconciling either if it's the artistry or the visuals or the storytelling that I'm responding to, and yet I can still feel the way I do about gun violence in real life. And there is, like, to be fair, that not every viewer has that. Not everyone's parsing things in the same way. And then there's also, you know, younger audiences, that there is something to be said of desensitizing people to the idea of how many, like, if, again, using John Wick, of that is just sort of like body after body after body, and they're bad people and they're all armed, but there's still a sort of like disposable quality to them that's concerning. So yeah, I think that it's always good to be asking yourself those things and puzzling them out. And I know my opinion on it is constantly shaking, and it changes. That's also the idea of what you're getting out of a film and how much the people making films really do. Their POV comes through in so many ways, because how you feel about either the sanctity of life, or like there's plenty of horror movies where I'm like, oh, there's so many good kills in this one.
Totally.
And it's because they've thought of all these inventive, fun, this is the words I'm saying, oh, inventive, fun ways to kill people. But you need to notice the sort of like difference between life and movies and all of those things. And I think checking in with yourself and having conversations about that are great and lead to great either self-knowledge or conversations. And I highly encourage people to get into that. And I also hope for all of you that you have a friend that uses the term schifferobe, and that it's the first time you've heard it since To Kill a Mockingbird, just like me and Alonso in this conversation.
And if you're a filmmaker and you make a movie where people are getting shot, that should have the same physical, you know, impact that watching the Jackass guys give themselves paper cuts has in the first movie. Like, you know, a bullet should really land in that sense, you know?
Yeah, it should mean something.
Yeah.
Thank you to everyone who has submitted a question. The number for the hotline is 979-803-1664. Or if you want to send an email, you can write to us at iffydrealonzo@maximumfun.org. Make sure you memorize that right before we change it next week. Now it's time for staff picks. It could be any movie at all. Alonzo, why don't you start?
So, yeah, this is we're coming on into June, and, you know, it is Pride Month, and a lot of folks are celebrating that in different ways. And I just wanted to point out a thing that's happening on the Criterion Channel that I'm super excited about. They are paying tribute to the legendary queer documentary filmmakers, Rob Epstein and Jeffrey Friedman. Between the two of them, they have made some of the most important, I think, contemporary LGBTQ plus documentary films. And this package will include the groundbreaking 1977 film Word Is Out, as well as The Times of Harvey Milk, The AIDS Show, Common Thread, Stories from the Quilt, Where Are We, The Celluloid Closet, Paragraph 175, and Howl. I think these guys are really important filmmakers, and they have made films that have, I really think, have changed the world in a lot of ways for queer representation and for telling queer stories. Paragraph 175 is, you know, talking about survivors of the Holocaust and about, you know, the men who at the end of World War II, you know, everybody got liberated from those camps. But if you had the pink triangle on, they just sent you to jail because you were still considered, you know, bad news by the interim government. So, you know, there's a lot of stories that would have gotten lost, I think, had they not told them, whether it's, you know, those getting interviews with those survivors, like when they were very late in their lives, or the amazing stories they told throughout the AIDS pandemic. So I very highly recommend, if you have not subscribed to Criterion Channel yet, you want to get that free month or whatever it is they offer, check out the section Pride and Protest, the films of Rob Epstein and Jeffrey Friedman.
All right, Drea, what you got cooked up?
Okay, so mine is not related to anything that we talked about today. It's just a film I found really enjoyable that not enough people saw. It is a movie called Blow the Man Down. Yes. You can currently see it on Prime. You can rent it. It's directed by Bridget Savage Cole and Danielle Cruddy. It's about two sisters on this like small cove in Maine, like a very small fishing town, and their mother has passed away. They're grieving for her. They're worried about money. And then sort of an accident, tragedy, assault, bad time happens, and they sort of cover it up. And then it's them being worried about that and all of the fallout. But it is a town that is completely governed, and the only people you see in it, it's a matriarchal structure. So it is just bossy women as far as the eye can see. June Squibb, Marceline Hugeaux, who played on 30 Rock. She played, Kathy Geiss, which I always love. She's in a bunch of stuff, but I just always love her as Kathy Geiss so much. Annette O'Toole, who you don't see enough.
Yes.
And of course, is it Margot Martindale?
It is Margot Martindale.
Margot Martindale.
As the local crime boss.
Yes. And who, truly. And so it's these old salty women in this sea town. And it begins with like a 5-part harmony sea shanty being sung by fishermen that looks like the Gordon's fishermen. And I just find it really enjoyable. It's like it's a little comedy to it, but it's mostly sort of like a black comedy drama, little sort of thrillery kind of elements. But yeah, Blow the Man Down. Check it out.
It is actually showing for free if you have a Prime Video membership.
Nice. Ooh. Yes, yes, yes.
Yes. Come on, Bezos. All right, Luce, what you got for us?
I loved Blow the Man Down, and I also have a dark...
You're about to say Bezos. I was like, hey!
I love Jeff Bezos. Leave him alone. That's my recommendation. Build up Jeff Bezos. No, I also have a dark comedy to recommend. One of my all-time favorites, a movie that's been incredibly inspiring to me. Speaking of Pride Month coming up, Jawbreaker, made by queer filmmaker Darren Stein. Jawbreaker, a lot of people have seen in certain areas, but I have found, as I've been talking about nonstop lately, that a ton of people missed it. I know when it came out and I was a teenager, I had felt like I had seen something that I had no idea could even exist. Yeah. It's extremely it looks like it would be a teen, just like Mean Girls, but then it's actually about murder. So speaking of death, and I have no problem watching a lot of movies with murder in that. It's three best friends who accidentally kill one of their best friends with a jawbreaker when they try to plan a fake kidnapping, and all the fallout of that. So it's Rose McGowan, Rebecca Gayhart, and most importantly, the best Greers around.
Yes.
Pam Grier and Judy Greer.
Nice. Team Greer.
Yeah. The script is hilarious. I've been rewatching it a lot lately, and it's one of the few comedies from that time that really holds up. And you're not like, oh, yikes. yikes, ooh. And I feel like it's because it's written and directed by a gay man and then produced by two women, one who also produced The Craft, by the way. So you like that vibe. You're going to like this one. And it really inspired my new horror comedy short that I'm going to film this summer called Surprise. That's also about an accidental murder between friends.
Yay!
These things happen.
Yeah, I mean, who doesn't have a story like that?
Yeah. And my staff pick is based off of zombies movies. Probably one I've done before, but I don't care. I'll do it again. Plus, it's relevant because they're about to make a sequel, Last Train to Busan, baby. Another father-daughter story to tug on your heartstrings the same way this one did. The exact same way it did.
Another sequel, because there already was one. It wasn't very good.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Peninsula.
Oh, well, let me not watch
this
that.
This is a remake, right?
Okay.
Not the one he's talking about, but yeah.
Oh, you know what? It might be. Yeah. But yeah, definitely watch not the sequel.
Yeah. First is real good.
Yeah. All right, great. Well, then let's just jump into the 5-star review since Alonzo did a 1-star review. If you leave a 5-star review, we'll read it on the air, like this one from Jacob Bean 13. I really dig the diverse and dynamic hosts on this show, each with a unique point of view to offer, and you can tell they have fun each week. Well, you ain't never lied, Jacob. You ain't never lied.
thank you
for blessing us with a 5-star review, and thank you to Luce for joining us today.
Yay,
all right, Luce. Is there anything you'd like to plug before you get on up out of here?
I would love to plug my new short film. But we're actually raising funds to get it made this summer. We have a stretch goal of $8,000, and you can help us make that movie. It's seedandspark.com/fund/surprisegirlboss, and it is a satire on girl bossery and toxic positivity and individualism, and there's a lot of great mean girl murder in it. So for fans of Jawbreaker and Drop Dead Gorgeous and the Heathers, come at me. Yeah, so you can follow me at LTB Comedy on Twitter and Instagram, and all my film stuff is at TooMuch.Productions. And listen to my podcasts, too. It's Always Halloween, and You Need to See This, my film podcast. I'm a busy woman. Come watch me do things.
Yes. Oh, indeed. Oh, indeed. All right. Make sure y'all tune in next week to find out what our new name
is. Oh, my goodness. Ooh. So exciting. So exciting.
But until then, if you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at @IffyDreaAlonzo. Our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/IffyDreaAlonzo, or send us an email at IffyDreaAlonzo@MaximumFun.org. Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. And this is a production of Maximum Fun.
Vegas.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.